Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 78 of season 11 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Alex Robinson of the Star Wars Minute. Welcome back.
Hello there. Hello there. Sorry, I jumped the gun. You're so eager.
That's okay. I'm glad that you're eager. You feel like you've been waiting like a week to be on here or something like that.
Oh, yes. It's been haunting me.
I'm sure. So, episode 78 begins with Garnier and Buck trying to stay warm and ends with the town continuing to get bombed. So why don't we start off with my first question that I always ask everyone is, what is your history with Band of Brothers?
My history with Band of Brothers, I guess, I didn't see it when it first aired. I think my stepfather had it on DVD, and that was the first time. I think at that time I had started maybe going through more of a World War II phase, being a middle-aged white man, you know, obsessed with World War II is what we do. So, so I was probably sometime around the time it was first out on DVD, and then I've probably seen it, I don't know, maybe two or three times over the years.
Okay, all right, great.
We watched him.
I'm actually happy to see that you actually watched the movie this time. Yeah.
Yes, this is close. I saw Private Ryan. I watched Private Ryan.
I know you did. You did. You didn't watch Die Hard. And, we've been down that road before. And, have you subsequently watched the full Die Hard, or you're still adamantly against it?
I can't.
You've only seen 5 minutes of it, and that's it.
That's the only 5 minutes. I mean, I'm sure I've seen 10 or 15 seconds of other scenes somewhere. I understand he yells something about, a cowboy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm familiar with it, but no, never seen it. It's my most interesting quality.
All right, if that's what you consider your most interesting quality, then okay.
All right.
I'll give you that one. But you've seen Van Brothers, so that's already good. That's already good.
Yes.
And did you remember most of it when you were watching it now?
Not most of it, but, the selected highlights and the some of the characters and so on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Fair enough. All right. So, we ended things yesterday with, the men trying to figure out what they're going to be doing in this, really bad weather and also, the bad situation that they're in where, they're surrounded. Even though none of them will actually admit to being surrounded, but they're surrounded. Maybe they like to be surrounded. They like to be surrounded, but they are surrounded. That's what it comes down to.
Yes, that's it does not look like a pleasant situation in any, both no. Psychologically, physically, very cold.
Yes.
I imagine damp.
Yeah. And so, and we also get the whole Doc Rowe thing with him running back and forth between the men, getting us... giving us information about the various, men in different foxholes. We get to see him go to town a little bit. We get an idea as to what's going on in Bestone. And, they did a great job of doing that in this particular part of the miniseries in order for us to really feel what these guys are going through. I mean, you said before, you feel the situation that they're in. And... I guess that's what Bruce McKenna was trying to get across in his writing, and the director took that and did a great job with it, making us really. I mean, I don't know if you know any of the background on this, but this is all done on a soundstage.
Oh wow, no, I did not. I did not realize that.
Yeah, none of the scenes in Bestone are, as far as I know, take place. I guess some of the stuff in the town, but I'm saying when the men are in the foxholes and stuff like that, that's all on a huge soundstage, which is...
That would make sense. It would be easier to film something like that when easy to fake and also much more easier to control the elements and so on. So that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. For sure. So here we have Garnier and Buck in their foxhole, and Garnier goes, yeah. He goes, yeah. Yeah, she's Just in time for Christmas, huh? So, I mean, basically, the whole idea here is that Buck is showing off a picture of him and his girl. We get to see the, I mean, the true, the real Buck Compton was an all-star catcher, in college.
Oh,
So,
that's cool.
yeah, he was on the UCLA. I think he was an All-American before he signed up to go be a to go jump out of perfectly good planes. So, he shows the picture. Now, the impression we get here, and I don't know if this is true or not, is that basically, she broke up with him. That's the impression you get
Right.
here.
Yeah, Dear
It's like
John
this is
letter.
a Dear John or a Dear John photo or whatever it is,
Right.
but
Yeah.
these guys are quite close, both Garnier and Buck, and he's just showing him the picture, and you can also see that his gloves, he cut out the tips of his fingers, so you still can do things with it, with the gloves, because it's probably freezing there. And Garnier goes, "Ah, just in time for Christmas, huh?" He goes, "Just in time for Christmas." So again, we get an idea of what's happening here, and you can hear in the background, you can still hear the music from the Germans playing, the German version of Silent Night, in the background, which it adds a little bit more flavor to what's going on with these guys, because here they are, in Bastogne in the middle of Christmas, or on around Christmas time, because I don't know if this is I'm trying to remember the exact date of when this happens, but it's around Christmas time. When
It must be before, because no one would play music after. You know what I mean? You wouldn't play Silent Night on the 27th of December,
you might, maybe you're
I imagine.
nostalgic. I don't know. But you're right. It probably
That's
is,
true.
it probably is just a day or two beforehand. And we get this moment between these two guys. Who, for spoiler for anyone who hasn't seen the whole thing, both of them live, and they go on to having a very long friendship, for 50, 60 years, and while they were both still alive. And in some ways, Buck, he starts laughing at this whole situation. When he goes,
What else can you do?
exactly. It's one of the situations where you don't know whether to laugh or cry. And at this point, that's what he chooses to do. Now, do you know anything about Buck Compton? Did you know that he was actually the prosecutor with Sirhan Sirhan?
Wow,
Yes.
that's crazy. Well, I mean, I guess I'm looking at it as, oh, this character from this thing went on to become that, but I mean, a lot of guys had military experience, so it's not crazy that a guy who was a lawyer at some point. But that is a funny coincidence that he wound up there.
And the Buck can feel that Garnier has just given him what he needs, just emotionally at this point. And then Garnier just takes the picture and just tosses it to the ground, basically, or inside the foxhole, meaning that you don't have to worry about her. And then
Do you think if you went back to that area, you would find, like, if you dug around, like, archaeologically, you'd find other photos, Dear John photos? I mean, there must be personal mementos and all sorts of stuff
that's
lost
a great
out there,
question
but,
that I really don't know the answer to. Again,
What? You don't know the answer to that question? I can't believe
not
that. You
that
don't
one.
know.
Sorry.
Okay,
I haven't
fair
gone
enough.
back to Bastogne to try and find the foxhole that Buck and Garnier were apparently in, and that they apparent and then Garnier apparently threw the through the picture on the ground. Whether that really happened, we will never know. That's one of the things also. I mean, they're obviously, they take a lot of poetic license here with a lot of things that go on. So it is,
You gotta.
do we know for sure that Buck himself was given a Dear John letter at this point? I don't know. It's not.
He didn't say so in his memoirs or
I
anything.
didn't read his memoirs. I've only read the memoir of the story of the entire Easy Company. And in that one, I did not see anything that said, that there was a Dear John letter for Buck when they were in Bestowing
Right.
in the foxhole.
It was probably a combined two different incidents to make it streamlined, But anyway, poor guy.
Well, thankfully, he went on to have a very long and productive life. So
Right. But at that moment, he doesn't know that. He's sitting in a
that's
foxhole,
correct.
really like, well, I'm probably going to get killed, and now I don't even have a girl to mourn me.
That's right. That's definitely the way that one looks at this. Which makes sense. I mean, because you see, normally when you're dealing with a fictional story, so anything can happen. And but when you're dealing with something that's based on truth, so they still need to stay within a certain parameters. They're not going to kill a character who lived and or vice versa, unless you're talking about Jurassic Park or something like that. But in this type of thing, obviously Jurassic Park's not real. Well,
Isn't it?
it depends on who you ask. But here.
Yes. Well, at this time, it is certainly is real because it's 1944 or 45,
Well, it's
so.
the end of 44. The end of 44.
Okay, so yeah, it'd be
Again,
decades before Jurassic Park was
it's Christmas,
invented.
so it's got to be the end of 44 because the war was over by 40 by Christmas 45. It was definitely over.
Well, yeah, it makes sense.
So that part you didn't really have to deal with. Then we jump to another one of the foxholes, and we get to see
The
Malarkey and
gang.
Muck and Pinkala. They're all there, and these guys are also trying to just find some way to stay warm. And
Yeah, keep going.
Malarkey's rustling through his pockets, and he goes, "Oh shit, I almost forgot. Oh." He goes, "Lucky Strikes means fine tobacco." And Muck looks at him and goes, "Where the hell did you get those?" Malarkey takes him out and goes, "Merry Christmas, fellas. Gotta thank jolly old Saint Luz. Luz. Gotta thank jolly old Saint Luz." So apparently George Luz was the one who got him these cigarettes at the time. He goes, "Oh, beautiful." And on the one hand, it's a great way for them to possibly warm themselves up, but on the other hand, if you're trying to, make sure the enemy doesn't see where you are. I don't know if lighting a cigarette or lighting a lighter in the first place is necessarily the smartest thing to do. But especially
Well,
in a
I'm sure
pitch
have you
dark
ever
night.
just have you discussed the phrase three on a match
Yes.
on the show or?
Not in no, not in
Okay.
this. We did discuss it, but in a different season I discussed it. I'm trying to
Okay.
remember what season it was. There was a time that I did discuss that. But feel free to go ahead. You can talk about it.
Well, the phrase was the three on a match, meaning you shouldn't if you're in a foxhole and you're lighting cigarettes, only two people should go for one match because if you take enough time to light three people's matches, that gives enemy snipers enough time to spot the light, aim at you, and fire at you. And so they say, so this one he's using a lighter, so I don't know what the rules
Yeah,
are for
I was
lighters
gonna say
there.
you use a lighter and you had
So
enough trouble lighting getting the lighter to start, so
yeah.
to turn it off. I don't know. Maybe these guys.
And as we're about to see, these guys get pretty sloppy with their fire, so
Yes, that's true. And
putting them at some
if
risk.
you're dealing with superstition, then Muck and Pinkala, 2 weeks later, what happens to them, might be a little bit of payback for the three on a match thing. I don't know. But these guys are nice and happy that they're able to light up these cigarettes.
Yeah. It's hard to hear those. I know people, I know like, New Yorkers really talked like that back in the day, like in that heavy accent, but it's so hard to hear without it sounding cartoony in a way. I guess it's kind of like an extreme Southern accent. Like sometimes you hear it and you're like, is this guy parodying, the way, but I know that's how way people really talk back then. So, or at least some people really talk back
Well,
then.
we know that,
I'm dancing. I feel like I'm dancing.
right? I mean, I don't remember where
Sounds so.
Pinkala is from. I know that Muck is from upstate New York.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to remember where Pinkala is from. And you know, the we get the feeling of how cold he's got, and then the shot changes.
And how boring it is.
Well, that too. Usually when one is on guard duty, it's pretty boring.
Yeah.
Which is usually
Until
why,
it
which
gets.
is usually why you're not there by yourself, usually with someone else, so you can talk.
Yeah, you can't. You won't just doze off.
Yeah, well, not also the idea of dozing off, but also this way you have someone to talk to and you know, keep you a little more alert, you know, that type of thing. Which makes sense. Muck gives Pinkala, you know, the cigarette from Malarkey, and he goes, "I'm shaking so goddamn much, I feel like I'm dancing." He goes, "There you go, buddy. There you go." Then we
Right.
move to another foxhole, and in this foxhole we have, you know, Pee-wee and Frank are in there. And he goes, "Frank, what are you doing?" He goes, "It's Christmas, Pee-wee." And he goes, "Here, Frank." And he hands him the snow cone, you know, from of the day that was flavorless. And he goes, "What is it?" And he goes, "Lemon powder snow cone." Apparently,
What's the first word that he says? I couldn't understand what the first word he says in that is.
lemon powder.
Lemon
Yeah,
powder.
which apparently is something that they must have in their you know, narrations.
In their
Yeah,
kit.
exactly.
Yeah.
And he goes, "Nah, I'll pass." And then he lifts up the thing and goes, "Merry f-ing Christmas." So, you know,
They probably had a lot of
that's
that.
right. We get to see that, you know, these three different foxholes, we get to see the various thoughts of, you know, how these guys are all trying to pass the time and trying to keep themselves somewhat sane and, you know, and alert, you know, throughout the whole thing. And then the shot changes again, and we see two guys starting a fire.
Another three on a match,
There
guys.
you go.
What if, that seems like it should be basic training 101.
Okay, and well, th and
They're
this is an
desperate.
officer also. So
Yeah.
you know, you'd think that Harry would know a little better than to do this type of thing, but you know, I guess it's just too freaking cold.
Yeah.
I guess that's the
Yeah.
answer that these guys can give. You know, it's just cold.
Yeah, even the bosses are like, all right, just for a little bit.
Yeah, trying to figure out how to
And
do that. You never
yeah.
know.
I had something about the lucky strikes, if I could go
Sure, go
back a
ahead.
second. Have you discussed lucky strikes much at all so far?
No, we haven't.
Well, I was first of all, product placement, definitely, you know, mentioning a brand of cigarettes, but I was curious, apparently the U.S. Armed Forces went through 350 billion cigarettes during that time. And apparently Lucky Strikes, their packages used to be green, but the green in the packaging was made with copper. And so once the war broke out, they needed the copper for, you know, war stuff. So Lucky Strikes, their whole thing was they turned their packaging white, and it was like, you know, Lucky Strikes goes to war. We've given up our green package. And I guess they kept it because I think Lucky Strike is still white and, you know, with the circle and the logo in the
Yeah,
middle
I think
there.
so too. For some reason, I always recalled that there
Yeah.
was red on it, but yeah, but I do remember that it's primarily white, you know, from that perspective.
Yeah. But yeah, apparently it used to be green, so there you go.
Okay. It
Were you ever a smoker?
never took a puff of any type,
Not even a
not even a
puff.
puff of anything.
Wow. Okay.
You know. I've had the opportunities, but never had the urge or inclination to do so.
Right. But it looks so cool,
It
though.
does look cool, but I don't do things just because it's cool. If I was doing things just because it's cool, I don't think I'd be
Oh.
doing movies by minute.
Oh, wait a minute. I can't tell
That's not a
if that's a
no. That's
diss.
not a diss at you. That's a diss at that's a diss at all the people who think that we're all completely nuts. You know, that's my thing. We're the
Yes.
nerds. We're not the cool guys from that
Right.
perspective. But
But
it's fine.
in a way, doesn't that make us coolest?
Yes. But you know, but within our circles, we are. You know, that's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, we're We're the coolest of the nerds.
Yes.
Yeah. But whatever. It's an argument I have with my wife just about every week when I'm recording. She's like, why do people even care? What's the point?
Oh, man.
But she still, you know, she still supports me doing it. She just doesn't understand it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, I can't, you know, I you know, I've been doing this for 11 seasons, so something's working. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You gotta have a
That's
hobby.
right. That's right. That's very true. And so, anything else you want to say about the Lucky Strikes before we move back to Harry and Winters?
Okay. Nope, that was it. That's fine with me.
So, let's proceed. So Winters walks up to Harry and goes, Harry, fire's not a good idea. And he goes, just a couple of minutes. He goes, we're in a dell. And so, do you know what a dell is? Besides the farmer, in a dell. Or, and I'm not talking about a Dell computer.
I assumed it was like a valley.
I mean, because, you know, growing up, we always heard the story of the farmer in the dell, you know, the song. Yeah. Okay. And yes.
That's the only time I've heard dell. Yeah. Never. You never hear it in any other context.
Correct. Well, now you'd have. you have your second reference. Apparently, Welsh was a guy who used to, you know, have that song sung to him as a kid. You know, hey, we're in a dell.
Yeah.
So yes, a dell is a small valley, usually among trees.
Okay, so that wasn't too far
correct.
Off.
Yeah. But that makes me wonder what the whole idea of the story is between the farmer and the dell, because why would a farmer be in a valley of trees.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's the mystery. This, I don't know. Hi ho, the Mario.
Apparently. So, I mean, the farmer in the dell is it reenacts the importance of agricultural life, animal, and family relationships in early 19th century Germany by having participants imitate the types of animals and family existence common in rural areas. Again, okay. I do recall, you know, from my childhood, you know, hearing that Mother Goose nursery rhyme about the farmer and the dell, which the funny thing is it's originally a German song, which when you translate it means a farmer drove into the wood.
Okay.
In
that doesn't really clarify very much,
not
unfortunately,
at all.
But yeah,
not at all. In the UK, it's known as a farmer it's known as the farmers in his den, and in Romania, it's the farmers in the field. So, you know, it's a little bit strange. How, you know, in each country they'll put the farmer in a different place, but like what is the, you know, what are they trying to say here? Which, you know,
I think if nothing else, it teaches us that people, it reminds us that people in olden times were just so much dumber than we are, that the fact that they could be entertained with a song about a farmer.
Were they dumber or were they just bored?
Well, I mean, I think they were dumber because they were bored. You know what I mean? They didn't receive any. Like, you're just sitting in a field all day, in a dell all day. You know, you're not getting any kind of mental stimulation out there in the dell.
Apparently people felt that they would. I mean, that they were getting something.
But they didn't know any better. They thought they were. But we look back at it now, they were clearly, like, you know.
Well, that's also because anyway. we look at it.
Because
we look at it from our perspective and we say, hey, you know, if you don't have your telephone or your computer, you're just going to be completely bored. Like, how can you do other things? How can people read books? How could people, you know, do puzzles? How could people knit or whatever it is that people do, you know, when they don't have, you know, when they have a power outage, you know, that type of thing. I don't know.
Well, yeah.
But they,
if you have all that free time and the best song you can come up with is Farmer in the Dell.
Yes.
I think you need some more
That is amazing.
anyway. But then again, it's language lingered this whole long, that song. So it's a classic.
That's true also. I
Who might
mean,
have put it down?
the song goes all the way back to 1826. So right now we're talking 200 years. That's just amazing
Oh.
that, you know, that we're saying this this boring song you know, has lasted 200 years. You know,
Yes. Well, any of us knew what
that's
Adele
right.
was or
And
who Adele
nobody cared.
was.
You know, that's the thing.
Yeah.
But the plot line of the story is basically the passing down of desires from a farmer who wants a wife to their child who needs a nurse to a dog who longs for a bone. Because the lyrics are
Oh.
the farmer and the Dell, the farmer wants a wife, the farmer wants a child, the child wants a miss, the miss wants a dog, the dog wants a bone, we all clap the dog. I don't know, I guess they got hungry. I don't know.
The child wants a miss.
Yes, I miss MISS, capital M, meaning he wants a nurse.
Oh, a nurse. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
And then
Well, there you go.
you know, it continues with other animals and stuff like that. Maybe it's just a way to occupy kids. Maybe that's the
But it does make you wonder why he chose to say that word out of all the words he could have said that were in
correct.
Adele.
Well, again, maybe he was bored as a kid and said to his parents, he goes, "You're singing this damn song. What the hell is Adele?" And they're like, "Well, it's a little valley in the woods." And he's then 20 years later, he finds
Yeah.
himself in Bastogne and goes, "Hey, guess where I am? I'm in Adele." I never thought that I would be able to bring up something like that, but apparently I can. You know, don't know.
I was one time hanging out with some people in the country, and we saw a truck go by with a bunch of hay bales on it. And I made some joke about, oh, that being the last straw. And he was like, hay and straw are totally different things. They're not the same thing. And I was like, no. That's like the Dell. I'd be like, oh, look at this Dell. He'd be like, that's not a Dell. A Dell has to have a,
That's right.
low-lying
Yeah,
scrub. So.
the angle isn't right for it to be a Dell. It needs to be a different angle. That's
Yeah, no.
true. All right.
Come on.
And
This is a
that's right.
meadow.
And Winters basically, you know, is on board with us because he goes, "Adele? You mean where fairies and gnomes live?" Which, you know, which
I
basically
guess.
means that you know, in rural Pennsylvania, where Winter grew up, they when they talked about Adele, they talked about places that had fairies and gnomes. You know, I don't know where that comes from because there's nothing in the story in the nursery rhyme about that. But hey, you know,
Well, they are in Germany, and Germany is does you know is the home of a lot of fairy tales
well, they're not in Germany yet.
and
They're
things like that.
still in Belgium.
Oh, they're just outside
I
of
mean,
the
they're in German
sky.
occupied
Okay,
Belgium,
that's still
yes, but they're not in Germany. So,
right.
you know, does
Right.
that can I don't know if an area is occupied, is that considered part of that country, or is it the jump back to, you know, what it used to be? I don't know.
I think it's like a freedom fighter terrorist thing. I
Probably.
think to you, to the occupier, it's now considered legitimate, but to the other people, no, this
Okay.
is not a legitimate.
Okay. Yeah,
Yeah.
which reminds me of George Carlin. He had a whole thing about that. And then Nixon shows up behind them and goes, "I swear I thought I could smell a fire." And he looks down and goes, "Hey, I did smell a fire." He goes, "Are you out of your mind?" And Winters turns to him and goes, "Well, we're in Adele." Nixon then goes, "Huh?" And as they're having this little conversation, we hear an airplane go over overhead, and then you know they realize that they made a mistake of having this fire because you know they start getting hit with all this artillery fire, and Winter screams down.
So we're to assume that the plane was a German plane and it
Yes,
spotted them. Okay.
that's what we're to assume. Whether it is or not, I don't know. And then Winters goes. The first thing Winter says is, you know, after he says "get down," he goes, "Put out the fire."
Yeah.
And then we see that Welsh gets hit by a shrapnel, and they scream "medic." And he goes, "Ah, oh, God, God!" And he starts screaming, and you know he's not very happy, obviously, having gotten
No.
injured. You know, because I you know the idea is that if you get injured because you did something stupid, you're basically, that's when you're going to be,
Okay.
getting more upset at yourself.
Yeah.
And that works in today's, daily life also.
Yeah, sure. FAFO,
Exactly.
right?
Completely. And Nixon then runs over to the radio and goes, "This is Captain Nixon. I need an A Jeep for 2nd Battalion CP." And Winters is trying to help Welch, and he goes, "Stay still, Harry." And then we see Doc Rowe just frozen in his foxhole. And
Literally
yeah,
and figuratively
exactly.
frozen.
And another one of the medics show up, and Nixon goes, "Hey, Doc, put that out. Repeat, a Jeep for 2nd Battalion CP. Medic." Now it's funny, they call for a medic because they want Doc Rowe to show up, but they do have another medic there already. So it's a little strange that they're still, I think it might be Spina that's there with them. But it's just very funny that they're still calling for somebody else. But they make sure that they have to put out that fire as quickly as possible. And
Sure,
then we
yeah.
see two guys run across the field, and they go to where Doc Rowe is in his foxhole. And Doc, 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 come on, Doc. And the other guy goes, "Is he hurt?" He goes, "I don't know. Move, get in." And they go, "Doc, I gotta go, I gotta go." And they basically, they want to stay safe also by getting in the same foxhole. Which
Yeah.
doesn't look like it's a foxhole that's big enough for three guys, but whatever. You do what you can. And then,
So do you think with the double medic situation, is it because, well, the other medic's not doing anything, so we might as well just have him come here too? Why are they calling for another medic when they're just already.
well, there's I can give two reasons, which one of them could be that maybe they knew that Doc Rowe is better at these things than Spina. That could be one reason. The second reason is because when Bruce McKenna wrote this episode, it's Doc Rowe centralized. So you need to have Doc Rowe be the doc who takes care of stuff. Yeah, those are the
Okay.
only two explanations I can come up with. I don't
Yeah,
Yeah,
strange.
exactly. And then Doc snaps out of it and goes, "I gotta go, I gotta go." And he goes, "Eugene, come on, get up. The captain's yelling, come on, get up." Okay, get up. And he goes, "Not okay. Lie down, okay? Get up. Get up. Come on. Move. Jesus Christ." And as Babe is trying to get Doc to get up, he slices his hand. He goes, "Oh, my hand, my goddamn hand." And then we see Winters calling for Doc to show up. He goes, "Ro, get over here." And at this point, Doc Rowe and Babe do show up. And they reach Welsh, and Welsh is just continuing to scream, and he goes, "Jesus." And Winters goes, "Okay." And he goes, "Row." And he goes, "Stay still, Harry." And then Nixon looks at him and goes, "It's just a scratch, Harry. You're not getting out of here. You're not getting out of here this easy." Which is a very interesting comment for him to make, because he's basically saying, it's just a scratch. They're not going to send you back home, and we want you to stay here with us, as opposed to
Right.
being
Yeah.
relieved that someone could actually find a way to actually get out of here and go home. That type of thing.
Right. Yeah.
And then
Yes, gallows humor.
And then Winter says, "Jeep's on its way, hang tough." And they he takes out the bandage and tries to wipe away the blood, and then pours some of the sulfur on it. And then someone gives him a towel, and he goes, "Here's a towel." And they start using the towel in order to try and stop the blood. I mean, it's somewhat graphic what they show about what's going on with Welsh's
Yeah.
with the way that he's been hit, with his wound. Exactly, because it's it is a pretty dangerous place to get hit on your upper thigh, because there are some pretty dangerous places there for things to happen.
Important
Yes,
tubes.
yes. And I mean, and Docker also just puts his hand directly on it, and tries to do what he can in order to put a tourniquet on. He takes a stick that he just takes from the ground and makes a tourniquet on the whole thing, and he's using a towel to try to I guess mop up as much as he can from the from everything going on. And when he puts the bandage on, he presses down really, really hard. Well, she's not happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's can't be fun. Can't
nope.
be pleasant.
No, nope. Not at all. One of the guys shows up. One of the guys says, I got morphine in my pocket. Give it to him. He goes, where do you want it? Opposite thigh, the left thigh. So it's interesting that the, I'm not a medical professional, so I couldn't tell you, what the purpose is to put the morphine in the other leg. Maybe it's because you don't want it to bleed out.
I assume that's
moving because you're not injured on that spot, but might as well, do that. And then they hear in the background a Jeep getting closer, and they decide that what they're going to do is they're going to pick up Welsh, and so beforehand, mm-hmm. Doc, uses the blood to make a mark on his forehead. Basically just telling everybody, just so that people know that he has gotten morphine, because he puts an M on it.
Yeah.
And the guy's all...
barely legible M. Yeah. It's a little...
Well, again, it is blood, so it will at some point, dry very quickly, and so you got something on his forehead.
Yeah.
So, I don't know all the different symbols that you would put there, but it probably doesn't look... The M probably doesn't look like any of the others. From that perspective,
hopefully, yeah,
exactly. And
well, it's a W, so he's had he's well. We can let him go.
There you go. All right, you're fine now. Doc Rowe said you're okay, so you might as well get out of here. And they carry him off to the Jeep, and Winters goes, "All right, elevate his head, get him up. There you go, soldier. Take that." And then Winters comes back to where Doc Rowe is, and he goes, "Eugene, get yourself into town. Get a hot meal." Which seems to be something that he keeps telling everyone. If you can get to town, go get yourself a hot meal. You might as well. But on the other hand, think that they still need Doc in the field with them in case anyone else happens to get injured along the way.
Well, maybe he sees that Doc's brain is cooked, and so he's like, okay. This guy needs at least, if he's going to be any use, he needs at least a little break, because he's about to snap.
Fair enough. Then we get a shot of a whole bunch of planes in the sky that are being shot with anti-aircraft, which is it's a pretty cool CGI shot because you see all the explosions as they're shooting up, and then as the camera pans down, we see that the town of San Iguiz is basically under attack, and we see guys running.
So are these are
all over the place.
These are
what?
Are these supposed German planes or Allied?
Those are
planes?
German planes that are shooting at this area.
Okay.
Because the Allies are in the town and they're shooting the anti-aircraft guns, so it must be German planes that are bombing the area.
Okay, I'm just surprised. I was just surprised that the Germans would have had this much of an air force left at this point in the proceedings. But again, I'm no expert on World War II, and obviously I'm sure the makers of Band of Brothers researched it a bit more.
I'm sure they
did.
I mean, I've spoken to numerous people, that were part of the production, and obviously there were mistakes that were made along the way. So it is possible that. They do know that this town and this church gets bombed. So,
Right. Yeah.
And I doubt that it was the Allies who did it, from that.
Well, I thought it was more of an artillery bombing, like from,
Well, we see it through the planes.
That kind of stuff. More like shooting missiles, shooting stuff in as opposed to planes. But
they do that more now, long range, than they did back then. it's 82 years later, the things are done a little differently. The rockets go a little further. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
and we see a lot of chaos in the town. People are running all around. You see civilians running. You see soldiers running. You just see people just running for cover. And one of the things that we see that Dakro does is he jumps on top of Welsh in order to protect Welsh, which is pretty commendable for him to do it that way. Because you'd think that he would try to keep himself safe also at the same time, as opposed to do that.
Yeah, I guess you're a doctor first, right?
Yes, very true. And as the Jeep gets closer to the town, there's a bunch of explosions from both the right and left side of various buildings that are getting bombed, and someone screams, "Get out quick! Clear the road!" And as that happens, that's where this 5-minute segment ends. Yeah, so
Exciting.
leaving us in suspense for tomorrow. So,
I don't know how they're gonna get out of this one.
So, Alex, did you have anything else you want to say about this particular 5-minute segment?
Nope, not particular. I think everything I think I got rid of everything. Getting cigarettes at Christmas in a World War II movie seems like such
Cliche.
a like yeah, kind of thing we've seen. So, but I guess it's cliche because it was a real thing.
Apparently,
So,
yeah. Or they just added to the cliche here. It could be either way. There's, I mean, I could ask Bruce again, but any questions that I've asked him about this episode, he basically said, "I don't remember."
Oh yeah,
Which I
that's a
understand. He
while
wrote this
ago.
25 years ago. For him to trying to remember why he did a particular thing, at the time, it worked. Whether he meant to or not, it doesn't matter, from that perspective.
I mean, I think it's a shame because these guys are all getting older, and pretty soon all these guys are going to be gone. So it's probably important we get their experiences
Wait,
down,
you're talking about, one
before
second, you're
they're
talking
all.
about the writers, or you're talking about the men of Easy? The men of Easy, unfortunately, all have died. I think the last one died.
No, I'm talking about the people who made
Okay,
the
yeah, but
production.
do you necessarily remember, specifically why you did something 25 years ago? Probably not. Even
Well, it
if it was
depends.
something, no, but it's a minor detail. To ask him what was the reason that you decided to, to use Doc Rowe, if you have another medic nearby. He's not necessarily going to say, that he remembers the reason for that. And I don't fault him for that at all. It makes complete sense.
I know a lot of times they don't like to talk about their experiences, so it's, the fact that they share anything at all is
That's
good.
very true. Whatever. I mean, Bruce, in the interview that I did with Bruce that everyone heard last week, you all heard how he is very proud of the work that he did with Band of Brothers. So, I'm just waiting for him to bring us another one. He was actually the head writer on the Pacific. So, he
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, the
Yes.
sister series. It's brother
Exactly.
series, I
More or
guess.
less,
I don't
yeah.
know.
All right. So today's segment is Band Brand, where my guests will give their top five movie bands. So, Alex, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Well, number five, I have being a Star Wars fan, I of course have to say Figrin Dan and the Modal Nodes. Number five, those of course for the layperson are those the aliens playing the music in the cantina in Star Wars, the big bulbous heads with the black
I'm
eyes.
actually
Number
surprised.
five.
I'm actually
Number
surprised
four,
that's so
John.
low on your list. I would have thought it would be higher. We'll
Oh
have to wait and
well,
see what else is there.
Well, also they're kind of at a disadvantage because we only hear two songs from them. So most of the other people on this, there's more than
We
two
hear
songs. So
only two
it's
songs, but
number
49
four.
years later, most people who know Star Wars can still sing that tune or can name that tune.
That's
So.
true. That's true. But most people think of John Williams. They don't think of Dan Figured Dan and the
Well,
Modal
it depends.
Nodes.
Depends on who they are. When no, it depends on what music.
Yeah,
If you're
that's
just
true.
hearing the do 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 do, that you don't think of. I don't think of John Williams when I think of that.
No,
It
you think of
automatically.
them, but you don't know their name.
Well, I do,
Yeah.
but most people don't hear
I meant you in the
Yes.
editorial you. Well, so number four I have, this is a singer and not a band, but it's Johnny Fontaine, who of course is the lounge singer who is indebted to the Godfather, Vito Corleone, who needs the part in that picture because it's going to make him a
Yes,
big star.
especially when one leaves a horse's head in the director the producer's
It's a good
bed.
grip.
The producer or the director?
Yeah, it's a
I'm trying to
memorable
remember.
calling card.
Producer, yeah, okay.
Producer. Yeah. Number three is the Electric Mayhem. They are the band from the Muppet Show, Dr. Teeth, Animal. I count them as, like, technically you could argue that they are a TV fake band, but they were in the Muppet movie,
No,
so I'm gonna let it
they're there.
slide.
They're there.
Yeah. And number two, The Ruddles. Eric Idle and Neil Innes's terrific. If you're a Beatles fan, you have to search down The Ruddles. And number one, Spinal Tap, the heavy metal band behind such hits as Stonehenge and Listen to the Flower People.
Very nice.
So yeah, that would be quite a
Yes.
lineup. Quite a fake
Where would you put
bandapalooza.
Max Rebo on this list?
You know, I almost put down, I was going to say the Max Rebo Trio, not the Max Rebo. By
No,
that, I mean the original
I know
Max
exactly
Rebo
what
band
you're
of
talking
just
about.
the three of them.
You're talking about
Okay, I
Size
couldn't
Zero.
tell.
I mean, come on.
Okay, well, for the.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't mean you didn't know. I meant, yes. I feel like they kind of ruined it by turning it into Jedi Rock. So, unfortunately, Max Rebo didn't make the cut because they're corporate
Yeah,
sellouts.
okay. That makes sense. But according to the novelization, I know you don't deal with legacy and stuff like that, but according to the novelization and legacy, Max Rebo actually survived the sail barge.
The events, yeah, the events of the sail barge. Good, I'm glad.
According to that novel, a lot of the people survived. And I was like, there's way too many people that survived. They're able to just jump off and
Yeah.
land in the sand and not fall into the Sarlacc pit. All right. Oh, okay.
And make their way back to civilization. They were way out there in the
That's
middle
right.
of the desert. Like, how are they? I mean, maybe they could just call someone on one of their walkie-talkies or something, but
That is
still.
true. I mean, Boba Fett was saved by Dengar. But again, what the hell was
Boba
Dengar
Fett.
doing there? So, Boba Fett, where?
Well, it depends on who you believe. Now he was saved by the sand people, so it depends on which version,
That
which
is correct.
legend you believe.
100%. Well, that's why it's a choose your own adventure type of thing.
Yeah. They're
Oh,
all fake stars.
really? No, come on. Alex, how could you say that? Blasphemy, blasphemy. Yes, I'm aware of that. All right, so now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie, where I will give you some hints.
Oh
You
boy.
have to try and guess what World War II movie. So let's spin the wheel and see what you randomly will get. And around and around and around the wheel goes. And let's see what movie comes up. Okay, is a famous World War II movie from 1949 starring John Wayne as a
Oh.
Marine
Oh.
who is in charge of a platoon of men that are about to take a very famous island.
Is it the
Yes,
Sands
it
of
is.
Iwo
It's
Jima?
very good.
Oh boy, wow. I'll pat myself on the
There you
back for
go.
that one.
Nicely done. Nicely done. All right, so Alex, would you like to tell people where they can find Alex Robinson?
Well, my day job, I am the co-host of Star Wars Minute, a podcast where we go through the Star Wars movies 1 minute at a time. And we completed every movie from Star Wars all the way up to The Rise of Skywalker. So if you go to StarWarsMinute.com or wherever you get podcasts, you can begin your first step in the journey of Star Wars Minute.
Very nice. And what do you have in the future? Are you waiting to for the new Mandalorian movie so that you guys can talk about it, or is that like really far in the future?
No, I imagine we would probably do that. We're also going, they're going to be made the big announcement that next year in 2027 they're going to re-release the original unspecialized edition of Star Wars. So we'll probably do something in conjunction with that to celebrate that. So we've been kind of in a fallow period at the moment just because there haven't been movies, but I feel like things are about to get more interesting in Star Wars Minute land.
Okay, but you theoretically have already done the non-specialized version, haven't you?
Oh, I know. Yeah, I'm not saying we're necessarily going to redo the same thing, but I don't know. We're going to do something. It's too soon for
Okay,
me to
all right,
announce anything, unfortunately.
I'll wait patiently like everyone else. You can tell me later.
Yes.
exactly. All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie on Minute. You can find me on Facebook. Find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, moveaboutminute.com. If you want to send me an email, you can send it to moveaboutminute@moveaboutminute.net. So, until tomorrow, curhee!
Curhee!